Sanctify my heart.
Sanctify my heart.
Make it ready for you.
And make it ready for you.
Welcome to this broadcast of Sanctify My Heart, a ministry of the Troy Church of Christ featuring Minister James Glasscock. If possible, grab your Bible and join us in today's study.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sanctify My Heart. I'm James Glasscock and I'm the minister at the Troy Church of Christ. And as always, I want to welcome you and I want you to encourage you to get out your Bible and to join us in the book of Judges. And we're going to start in chapter 13, Judges 13. Now, we have been looking over the last, well, for the month of August, at heroes of the faith. And we have looked at Caleb and Joshua and their courage and their faith as Israel was about to enter into the land of Canaan that God had promised them. We have looked at Esther, Queen Esther, and her courage as she stood up for a nation that was on the brink of genocide. We have looked at Ruth, who was a woman of great faith and loyalty to her family and faith in God. And now we are here at the last lesson in this series, the fourth in this series, and we are going to look at Samson. Now, I find Samson an interesting character because he's not what we think of when we think of great spiritual leaders and great men of faith. And if we're just honest, that's not the kind of person that we think of. And we'll get into a little bit of why that might be. But what we know of his character is that he was somebody who was a bit impetuous. He was somebody who tended to have quite a temper. He was known for how many people that he had killed among the Philistines. That was one of his claims to fame. But there are other reasons that Samson is in the Bible. And if we don't look at the whole story, we end up with the wrong impression. And I want to say here from the outset, one of the things that I noticed when I was preparing for this message today, I looked at how other authors and people had handled Samson's life and how they talked about him. And do you know what I found? I found that most people only focused on those aspects that would be negative, on the things that happened in his life that would be failures, and on the things that he did that were immoral. Now, anytime we look at a life, our own or someone like this in history, you got to look at the whole picture. And it wouldn't be right to only look at the things that are good and are right and say, oh, this person was great, when it's not true. And it wouldn't be right to look at a person and only see their failures and only see the things that were the flaws in their character and say, oh, this person was only horrible, when that may not be true. And I think Samson is one of those people who is often looked at in that way, unfairly. Scripture, however, doesn't. It doesn't. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, we have what is called the Hall of Fame of Faith. And a lot of people that you would recognize their names are listed there. You have people like Abraham, Noah, Moses. You have Ruth. You have Rahab. You have Joseph. All of these people, and it says about each one of them, by faith they did what they did. By faith, Abraham followed God wherever God had led him, even though he didn't know exactly where he was going or how he was going to get there. He trusted in God and by faith did what God called him to do. Noah, by faith, built an ark and preached among the people and tried to call them into the safety of God's deliverance through the ark. And by faith, he did that even when people wouldn't listen. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell, it says in verse 30, after the people had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And then it comes to this list. Now, after all these people of faith, we would recognize this Hall of Fame type list. It says this, and what more shall I say? This is verse 32. I do not have time to tell about Gideon, which you may know the story of Gideon, a man who faced down an entire army with just 300 men and a whole lot of faith. Barak, and then we come to this name, Samson. Jephthah, David, Samuel, the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned into strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Now, in that list is our guy today, Samson. Samson is listed among the men and women of great, conquering, triumphant faith in God. So whatever we would look at with Samson, we have to look at it through this lens, that the Holy Spirit of God inspired the writer of Hebrews to say that Samson was a man of tremendous faith. And he even tells us why that matters. He doesn't ask us to ignore his weaknesses or the weaknesses of any of these people listed before him or after him. Instead, here in verse 34, it says that these people whose weakness was turned into strength and that they became powerful in battle, their weakness was turned into strength. Now that's going to be really the theme of what we're looking at here with Samson, because Samson was, quite truthfully, often a weak man. And you know what? If we're honest, we are often weak men and women. And what we need to know is that God can use us in spite of, well, really not even in spite of, but sometimes because of our weakness. Because it is in our weakness that we were finally humble enough to say to the Lord, "Lord, help me." And God does. And it's in that cry of faith that we are made strong. So let's look at Samson. Let's get a little bit of background here. Starting here in Judges chapter 13. "Again the Israelites," this reads, "did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. A little bit of background. It says that Israel again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Well, that's, you know, Israel's history with God, as we read through the Old Testament, is an up and down roller coaster history. There are times when they are doing great and they are strong and they are what God called them to be. They are truly a light to the world and a light among the Gentiles. And then there are times when they are idolatrous, when they are adulterous, when they are cheats and liars. Because why? Because they're human. Because they're human. The same could be said of all of mankind. There are times when we have our better days, our better years, our better generations, and there are times when we fail. We morally, spiritually fail. And this was one of their down times here at the beginning of Judges 13. And so God has promised them from the very beginning that when they are faithful, He will bless them and bless them and bless them. But when they stray into idolatry and when they stray into disobedience, that He will, at times, use things like foreign occupation. He will use things like being taken off into captivity, as we read about, for example, in the book of Isaiah and Jeremiah. He said He will use those things. Why? Well, again, if we were going to go back to Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews tells us it is because He loves them, and that every father will discipline his child if he really loves him. Now, that's discipline, not punish, but discipline. He will do what's necessary so that the child grows in character, grows in this case with Israel, grows in faithfulness and true spiritual obedience. And in this case, what was necessary was, on a very large national scale, on-campus suspension or timeout, whatever you want to call it, they were in big trouble here. And you see in the book, throughout the book of Judges, this roller coaster up and down. So that's where we are. And they are in a time of one of their downsides. "Well, a certain man named named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was sterile and remained childless. And the angel of the Lord appeared to her," appears to his wife, "and says, 'You're sterile and you're childless, but you're going to conceive and have a son.'" So this is, you know, kind of like the birth of John the Baptist or the birth of Jesus himself. This is a miraculous birth. And this angel of the Lord has appeared to her and said, "You're going to have a son. Even though you're barren, you're going to have a son." And he says, verse 4, "Now see to it that you drink no wine or no other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean, because you will conceive and give birth to a son. No razor may be used on his head, because the boy is to be a Nazarite. And a Nazarite, that means he is a person who has taken the Nazarite vow, dedicated himself completely to the service of the Lord, and has made certain commitments, such as not drinking alcohol, not being given to immorality, and not cutting his hair. So this child is going to be, all his life, under a Nazarite vow, set apart to God from birth, and he will begin the deliverance of Israel from the hand of the Philistines. So, very much in parallel to the birth of Jesus, almost a foreshadowing type thing, even though the personalities could not be more different. And their life trajectory could not be more different. There are some parallels. This is a miraculous birth. This is an angel announcing this miraculous birth. This is someone who is set apart for a special work of God, and it is one of deliverance. Another parallel here would be Moses, who, while his birth was not miraculous, his deliverance was. So, that's where we are here with Samson. That's our introduction to his life, and it's a heavenly introduction. So when you think about what kind of person this is going to be, well, you think, wow, this has got to be some kind of a spiritual giant. And indeed, he will become a judge, one who is extremely important among God's people in determining right and wrong and things like that. But he was not a person without his weaknesses. And if we jump ahead, and that's what we're going to do, this is what we're going to find. In chapter 14, let's look there. It says, Samson went down. He's grown up at this point. Samson goes down to Timnah and saw a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman at Timnah. Now go get her for me as my wife. Now that might sound funny, but you know, it has to do with a completely different culture from our own and the way these things were handled. The parents were going to go down and negotiate all this stuff. So verse 3, his father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? This is an important question, because it's not just a question of his parents not liking people from another people group. Okay, it's not a nationalistic pride sort of thing. According to the law of God, the people of Israel were not supposed to intermarry with foreign people. And the reason for that was not racial. The reason for that was spiritual. The warnings were that when you do this, they are dedicated to idols and other gods. And so when you do this, they're going to lead you astray. And sure enough, when you look at the history of God's people, that's most of the time what happened. If you looked at Solomon's life, for example, he also married outside of Israel, and it caused him all kinds of idolatrous problems. And if you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you can see some of the mess that it caused. And he learned from that, but not early enough in life, but he did learn from it. So they are concerned. Well, they don't realize there's something bigger going on here. So we keep going. This is the last part of verse 3. But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now, parenthetically, it tells us in verse 4, his parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at the time they were ruling over Israel. So really, this isn't about Samson at all. This is really about God. God has a plan for Samson. I mean, it's miraculous birth. He's going to deliver the people of Israel. God has clearly set Samson aside in a way that's very, very special. And so he's saying, oh, this is all a part of God's plan. The parents don't understand it, but it's all part of God's plan. And we see quickly that Samson is also being moved by God to do certain things. Verse 5, Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and his mother. And as they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. Now, I don't know about you, but a lion comes roaring toward me. I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest. I'm not really a big fan of fighting lions. Not sure my skills are all what they ought to be if I was in that kind of a situation. I don't know what I would do. But here's what Samson does. Samson sees this roaring lion coming toward him. In verse 6, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power so that he tore the lion apart. Now, it's important for us to realize this because kind of the pop culture understanding of Samson has always been that he got his strength from his hair. That is not true, and we'll see this, okay? That hair was symbolic of his Nazarite vow, his being set aside for the purposes of God, okay? That was a symbolic thing, a part of his vow. It did not miraculously give him strength. Who gave him strength? Well, it says right here in verse 6, when this lion came running toward him, what happened? The Spirit of the Lord came on Samson with power, and he rips the thing apart with his bare hands. That had to be something to see, didn't it? Well, this is what happened. So it wasn't hair. It was the Spirit of God that had come upon him. Now, he didn't tell his mother or father. This is in verse 6. He didn't tell his mother or his father what he had done. And then he goes on down and he talks to the woman, and he likes her. Well, long story short, God is using Samson to find an occasion to deal with the Philistines and deliver Israel from their hands. In other words, Israel is learning their lesson, and God is now going to deliver them from the Philistines because his discipline of Israel was not to last forever. It was a limited thing. And so now the end of that is coming near, and God is going to use Samson to bring that about, just as he had used Moses to bring Israel up out of Egypt. And so this is the point in that whole timeline that we're at. Now Samson, you know, he marries this young lady, and the Philistines see it also as an opportunity to get one up on Samson. Samson's become a thorn in their side. If we read this long enough, we would see all different ways that that's true. He is fighting them constantly. He is just giving them all kinds of trouble. He piles up their dead bodies every time that they go fighting against him. He just tromps all over them and embarrasses them and causes them to lose face and power. And so they really would like to find a way to undermine him. And at one point, they decide they're going to do, I mean, we would call it a bet, I guess. You know, he tells them, listen, here's a riddle. If you can answer this riddle, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes, which might sound an odd thing to us, but that was a very expensive bet at the time. And they say, okay. And this is what happens. They cheat. They threaten his wife's family's lives and influence her and say, listen, you got to find out the answer to that riddle. You got to find out the answer to that riddle because we want to defeat Samson. And she doesn't want to do it. She's crying about it all through the wedding and all of this stuff. But ultimately, she caves because they're threatening the lives of her family. Well, she gives them the answer. The riddle was this. Samson says, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. Well, the answer was, out of the eater, something to eat. And that's, you know, bees and producing the honey, the something, the sweet. But this out of the eater and the strong is the lion. And so it's all about this trick of the lion and the bees that are had their nest there in the lion's carcass, and so it all comes out of that. Well, he confronts them and says, listen, yeah, you gave me the right answer. This is all here in chapter 14, the second half. Yeah, you gave me the right answer, but here's the problem. You cheated. Actually, he uses a phrase that, again, is not the one we would use. He said, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you wouldn't have solved my riddle. In other words, if you hadn't messed with my wife, you wouldn't know what you were talking about. And so he accuses them of cheating, but he says, but you did give me the right answer, so I owe you 30 sets of clothes. So he goes and kills 30 of their men and gives them those sets of clothes, causing that much more friction, that much more problem, and everything else. Other stories, if you go through chapter 15, there's more that goes on. He sets fire to their fields and all kinds of things. He just keeps embarrassing them, humiliating them, and defeating them, and they keep looking for ways to conquer him. Eventually, Samson, one of his flaws, gets the best of him. Samson was a man with, as I mentioned before, he was impetuous, he was impatient, and he was weak when it came to women. Most people do know this part about him, and that part is certainly true to the story. He had a weakness for beautiful women, apparently. And one day, chapter 16, verse 1, he goes down to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute, and he went and he spent the night with her, and the people of Gaza were told, Samson's here. So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate, and they made no move during the night, saying, at dawn, we'll kill him. But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night, and then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate together with the two posts and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. Sometime later, he falls in love with another woman in the Valley of Sorek. Now, listen, when we look at this Hebrews 11, we see that he is mentioned as a hero of the faith. And then when we read here in Judges that he had gone in with a prostitute, and keep in mind that on top of all of this, he is married. And now we see him falling in love with another woman. We see what his weaknesses were. It wasn't just anger management, okay? The guy was weak when it came to sexual temptation. And I think it would be real easy for us to look at this and say, see, not a man of God. I could see somebody saying, see, that's just a contradiction in scriptures. No man like that could possibly be a man of God. Well, again, we've got to see the whole picture. We've got to see the whole picture. Because what we see in here in chapter 16 is the weakness of the flesh and the sinfulness of the flesh that Paul talks about in Romans chapters 6 and 7. And Paul talks about that if we are not walking in step with the Spirit, then we will become slaves of the flesh, and we will get back into those old sins and fall. And we won't do what pleases the Lord, and we won't do what's right, and we'll fail. And what we see here in 16 is Samson failing. I think that's important. One of the things that I love about Scripture, and maybe we see this even more in the Old Testament, but we see it throughout, is that we see the failures and the weaknesses of these men and women of faith. It doesn't paint a picture of people who were so perfect and just floated on, 6 inches above the ground because of their great and wonderful holiness. No, when we look at people like Samson, when we look at people like, Rahab was in the list, and Rahab was a prostitute, and she lied. But what overcame her past life? Well, she repented, and she believed in God, and she trusted in God, and faith conquers all. Love for God conquers all. It covers a multitude of sins. Love for one another covers a multitude of sins. Faith pleases God. And what we need to realize is that these men and women pleased God not because they were perfect. They pleased God because they believed. And at times they did fail, and that did not please God. And God makes that known to them, okay? Because what eventually happens is we have this whole story of Delilah, who is a seductress sent by the Philistines to try and get his secret. What is his Achilles heel? One preacher said, what's his kryptonite? If he's Superman, what's his kryptonite? And so she keeps asking him, and he keeps giving her false answers and tricking her. And she keeps coming back to him and saying, oh, you lied to me. If you really love me, because he said he loved her, if you really love me, you'll tell me. And he hedges around, and he gives her false answers in his weakness. But eventually he tells her, listen, my hair has never been cut because of a Nazarite vow. Okay? No razor, verse 17 of chapter 16. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazarite set apart to God since birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become weak as any other man. Now, when we read that, we get that pop culture idea of, well, see, the strength was in his hair. I'm going to show you how that's not really exactly what's going on here. This is Samson talking, and what he's saying is, if you did this, I will be weak, because this is my vow. This is my promise. This is my relationship with God, being set apart for God. And if you cut that off from me, I'm done. It's an interesting glimpse, actually, into Samson, because it's a moment where he actually is vulnerable. It's the only time in this conversation he has with Delilah in chapter 16 where he actually makes himself vulnerable. And in doing so, it's also the time where he actually speaks like somebody who actually believes in God. The problem is, Samson's too deep into this. He has been weak. He has not repented. He is still remaining weak. He is telling her this because he is letting himself being seduced, not because he's trying to be right, not because he's revealing truth, but because he's giving in to temptation. And in verse 20, this is what happens. She does as he said. She cuts off his hair. He indeed is weak, but here is why. Verse 20, she calls Samson, "The Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he didn't know that the Lord had left him. The most telling part of his story of all, he didn't know that the Lord had left him. The Lord leaves us when we leave our faith. And he doesn't leave us every time we're weak. Again, you could look back here, and there were times where Samson was weak. There were times when Samson didn't do all that he was supposed to do. And yet, he was still a man of God. But when he gave up even the most powerful symbol of his relationship and his dedication to God, he gave it up. And we, in our sin, do the same. God never wants to get rid of us. Satan cannot take us by his own power. Paul has said so. Nothing, neither height nor depth nor principalities or powers, none of these things can separate us from the love of Christ. But we can choose not to avail ourselves of the grace of Christ. We can choose not to avail ourselves of the strength of Christ. We can choose to give that up and fall. In that moment, we experience what Samson experienced. Now, I want to tell you this too. That's not the end of Samson's story. As you may know, the Philistines do indeed capture him and enslave him, gouge his eyes out, and have him churning at a mill. At one point, he is bound, standing between two pillars, with all of these this huge crowd of Philistines around him. And finally, in that moment, he turns back to his God. He turns back to Jehovah. And he prays to God that God will deliver him, that God will give him the strength to overcome. And in verse 28 of chapter 16, he says, "O sovereign Lord, remember me, O God. Please strengthen me just once more, and let me, with one blow, get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." And Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, and bracing himself against them, his right hand on one side and his left on the other, Samson said, "Let me die with them." And he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people who were in it. In that moment, he turned back to God, and God answered his prayer. And God answered his prayer. You see, he is a hero of faith, not because he fell, and not because he was perfect, because he wasn't. He was a hero of faith because when he hit rock bottom, he knew where to turn, and that was to God. And when you hit rock bottom, God is wanting you to do the same. Call on him. Call on him. Turn your heart back to the Lord. You would like to know more about how you can do that? Would you call us? Our information will be here at the end of the program.
Sanctify my heart.
Sanctify my heart.
Make it ready for you.
And make it ready for you.
We hope that you have been built up in your faith in God today during the study of His Word. If you would like to know more about the hope and grace that are in Jesus Christ, please visit us at the Troy Church of Christ. This broadcast is a ministry of the Churches of Christ, and if you would like to know more about our congregation, or if you would like to contact us with questions about today's study, please call us at 518-833-6825 or email us at troychurch@gmail.com. Our website will also provide more information, and you can download a free copy of this broadcast at troychurch.org. You may also write us at the Troy Church of Christ, P.O. Box 654, Wyandotte, New York, 12198. If you live in the Capital District and would like to join us for worship, we meet at 185 Main Avenue in Wyandotte, New York, every Sunday at 10 a.m. We also have children's worship and a special Bible class for children's ages 2 to 12 during the message on Sundays. God bless you, and join us again next Saturday, 3 p.m. for Sanctify My Heart.
And make it ready for you.
And make it ready for you.